to the Texas Pedestrian Safety Coalition meetings. This is our fall, we call it a kickoff meeting, but it's really the first meeting of the new grant year. The grant year started in October. So welcome, and we look forward to your participation today. As we get started, we usually have a question we pose to everybody, and today is no different. It gives you a chance to get used to the chat window, where it is. The chat window icon is in the, at least on my screen, it's located up just at the very top, just a little bit right of center. It's a circle with kind of what looks to be a little comma in it. If you select that, it'll bring up the chat window, and then down in the lower right corner, you can just click there and type in a comment. Throughout today, we welcome any and all comments in the chat window. If you have a question or you want to talk for a few minutes, just raise your hand or enter it in the chat window, and we will try and keep track of that and give you an opportunity to talk. The question for this meeting is, what are your favorite type of shoes? Shoes, obviously, important in many ways to being a pedestrian. In fact, I will enter my thing right now. So mine is actually, since the pandemic, I have transitioned to like Vans shoes and tennis shoes because they're comfortable and nobody sees them when I'm on virtual meetings. So that's a good thing. So if you would enter in type of shoes, Jeff, sneakers, nice, comfortable. That's kind of where I'm at right now. Chuck's Converse, thanks, John. Flat sandals, another comfortable option. We got another Vans, Go Vans. Birkenstocks, sneakers, good. Scott from Carmen City, thanks for joining today. Low hikers, high boots with heels. Cool. Okay, next slide, Melissa.
Laura.
Melissa Walton, I'm not sure what On Cloud is, but we'll get that. It might be a brand of shoe, I guess. The agenda for today's meeting is up. First, we'll go through last little bit of introductions. We will talk about the FY22 grant year overview. Basically, this particular project is funded by a TxDOT grant. We'll talk about what are the activities that we're going to be doing this year. We'll have some information from Melissa Walden from TTI on the Highway Safety Plan, particularly the pedestrian emphasis area that she's working on. We'll have a short discussion about the FY22 webinar series. That's one of the activities coming up in this grant year. Ben will lead that, and then we'll get stakeholder updates, and then we'll wrap up probably 11:30 or just a few minutes before 11:30. On the second to last item, the stakeholder updates, as we go through today's meeting, think about what you're doing that might be interesting and informative to other members of the coalition. And when we get to that stakeholder update section, I'll ask people to join in and give us an update. Please do share with us what you're doing. What we find out is one of the big strengths of these meetings and the coalition itself is that level of communication between stakeholders. So what you're doing and what you think is just maybe just a 1 minute quick update, that turns out to be pretty valuable to somebody else because they can get a good understanding of maybe what a new area or opportunity is. So I'm really encouraging everybody to think about, just give us a quick, 30 second update. It doesn't have to be anything elaborate on what you're doing in the area of pedestrian safety. And then when we get to that stakeholder updates time, we'll call on you. Next slide, Michelle, sorry. Okay, virtual meeting best practices. Please stay muted unless you are speaking. Obviously, we've been through this a few times and you've probably had hundreds of these types of meetings. So if you're not muted, Michelle will try and mute you. If you can, when you're speaking, turn on your webcam. It's not required, but sometimes it helps. And then lastly, actively participate in the meeting. Usually we don't have too many issues with this. people on this call are typically really, really wonderful about chiming in and providing comments in the comment box, raising their hand and providing input. But please do. If you're shy, don't be shy. It's a group, wonderful people, lots of great information, and we'd love to hear from you. Okay, next slide, Michelle. Okay, just a quick update on the FY22 grant year. Now, before we dig deep into that, we should talk about what we did during the FY21 grant year. The grant year goes from October 1 to September 30th. And during that year, we have certain deliverables that we have to provide to TxDOT. In the FY21 grant year, those deliverables included putting on the coalition meetings that we have here. We are contracted to do three. We typically do four just to make it a nice quarterly meeting. The other thing we're contracted to do are the is the forum, which is basically held once a year, Tuesday in the August timeframe. To be honest, that forum basically commands a majority of the resources that we have on the grant. It takes a lot of people to coordinate and to put on that forum for everybody. And it's been really successful. We've had, you know, we started out the first year with 200 and some people, and I think our highest was last year, the year before, at just over 400 people. So it's really it's one of the bigger meetings that TxDOT funds, and we're really happy that they do that, and it's really popular. As you move into the FY22 grant year, we have an extra activity in addition to everything else. That activity is conducting three separate webinars on pedestrian safety. And Ben's going to chime in a little bit later on this morning and talk about some of the webinar topics. But this area, this conducting these webinars, was really spurred by feedback from everybody on these calls and everybody on the coalition. People were asking for more opportunities to share information and then get information about pedestrian safety topics. And not just, you know, like during the calls, we try and get into the details a little bit, but in an hour and a half and with multiple items on the agenda, sometimes that's difficult. So what we've done at your request is really to put together an hour and a half's worth of speakers and materials on a specific pedestrian safety topic. Now, if you're wondering what topics, that's exactly what Ben's going to talk about later on this morning. But that's also a primer for everyone to start thinking about what topics they think might be important to hear about. And for TTI to dig in, we'll do all the homework, we'll put the materials together, and then we'll put on that webinar for everybody. And we'll send out invitations to everybody to those webinars as they get closer. The other activities within the FY22 grant year include coordinating the pedestrian coalition meetings. Again, we're going to look to have four of them, basically one each quarter. We will also put on the pedestrian safety forum in August, and Ben's going to talk about that in a little bit here. But those are our main activities. Again, we anticipate that the forum will command the majority of the resources that we have on this project, basically financial and effort-wise resources. We are looking to expand the project again next year. We're really fortunate that TxDOT funds this work and funds are conducting these meetings and the forum and everything else, and they've been really nice. They've expanded our budget a little bit in this coming year to put on those webinars, and we're hoping that they'll continue to expand our budget in the next year to do a few extra activities. So that's where we are with the grant year. I was kind of trying to keep track of any questions in the chat box. Ben, did I miss any? Or actually, does anybody have any questions about the current grant year and some of the activities we're doing? Okay, wonderful. So I'm going to turn it over to Ben Edelman. Ben is the co-PI on this project. He's going to talk a little bit more about the forum.
Thanks, Mike. And if anybody has any questions, as always, please feel free to chime in. So the date of the forum this year will be Thursday, August 4th. We always kind of shoot for that Thursday time period, that August time period. We will send out a save the date soon, so folks can get that on their calendar. But we do have confirmation that the forum will be held that day. Format. This is a little bit of a tough topic. We'd love to know exactly what the format will be. What we are hoping for is an in-person with a hybrid option, but there is going to be the option of going full in-person or full virtual. Of course, a couple of factors, the primary factor being the pandemic. We need to make sure that we are providing a safe environment for coalition members and folks that attend. So if there's any concern whatsoever with any sort of surge, any sort of variants, or anything of the sort, we'll have to switch back to virtual. So we're going to be moving forward with this this year's planning with, I would say, one foot in each lane until we can determine how we move forward. With that, I did want to say that our team's preference here at TTI is to provide an in-person event with a hybrid option. The idea would be that we can all get together again. We can spend time in breakout groups. Those of you that attended the forum, I think it was about 3 years ago now. Three years ago when the last time we had the in-person. What we did was shorter presentations and more breakout groups. I thought that was an excellent format, and I think that we had a lot of really good input. One of the things I like to say about this coalition is that it's not like a normal conference where you kind of go and you listen to the expert. Everybody in the group are experts. Everybody in the coalition have very specific areas of expertise that we want to provide the opportunity to share. So that is our preference. The other component here, though, is that we recognize that providing a hybrid approach where some people can attend virtually will provide for folks that perhaps are, even if we're finally getting to the point where the pandemic has wound down, would still allow those that have health concerns to attend and participate. And it also gives us the opportunity to find speakers beyond the state of Texas. That's a big piece of the puzzle. We typically, before we did that online version of these events, would maybe fly one individual in from out of state as a keynote speaker. And we still will look to do something like that, even in a hybrid approach. But it really, really expands the potential for speakers. So that is where we're at. We will be soliciting more input from folks on format and how it will work as we move through the grant year. But right now, at the kickoff of the grant year, that's where we're at, and that's what we're hoping for. We'll keep everybody in the loop regarding kind of the decision that we've made. If we do in person, where we'll be holding the event, and again, how we'll set up the hybrid approach. We have some ideas. We've been talking a lot about it internally, and the plan is to make sure that if we do move forward with a hybrid event, that it's still an event that is well attended in person. Those folks that come in person get to sit down and enjoy that lunch that we've had in years past, but that the folks that are participating virtually have the same access to information, have the same access to breakout groups and the kind of engaging experience that we really strive for. So that's where we're at. In terms of topics of interest, we always ask and we always get a lot of really good input. What I will say is that we definitely will still focus on ensuring that we are sharing all of the kind of bread and butter topics that we talk about. Engineering countermeasures, some of the more innovative stuff that's happening. There's been an update with a lot of the work that FHWA does in this area, so that will be a topic. I think we'll touch on that in one of our coalition meetings or perhaps a webinar, as well as the forum. So we'll be continuing to touch on those again, those bread and butter topics, the topics that are extremely relevant to pretty much every single person on this call and in our coalition. However, we want to continue to kind of dive into topics that continue to push our ability to improve pedestrian safety throughout the state of Texas. So to that end, you know, we're looking for additional topics. You know, we've touched on things like policymaking, funding, communication around around pedestrian safety. So right now, if you have any ideas, please feel free to drop them in the chat box. We'll be continuing to keep track of those. We've kept track of the input that has been provided after our last forum. Some of those will actually be incorporated into the webinar series, which again we'll touch on a little bit later. But ultimately, we'll continue to ask folks for ideas. Please feel free to send Michelle, Mike, or myself any ideas that you have via email, text message, carrier pigeon. You know, we get that input, and we certainly keep a running list of all of the topics, and then prioritize based on what we think are the greatest interest to the coalition. So with that, we'll end. Doesn't sound like anybody has any pressing ideas or questions in terms of this year's grant activities. It looks like Michelle's entered her email. Scott's talking about adopting and implementing Vision Zero policies. That's certainly a topic that that we can look into and talk quite a bit about. Jeff Miles, creating off-system arterial corridors for pedestrians and bicycles. That's an important one. So these are really good topics. See if anybody else has any ideas. So right off the bat, these are two great ideas, and this is what we have really come to appreciate about this group. You know, no shortage of support from the coalition to make sure that we have a good grant year. So with that, I'll also note that Michelle Canton has dropped her email. So again, you can always email her directly. And I will transition to Melissa Walden, who's going to talk about the strategic highway safety plan that TTI works on with TxDOT each year. And she is going to specifically talk about the pedestrian safety emphasis area and some of the activities that they have planned for this year.
Thanks, Ben. I'm glad I have a chance to sit with y'all today, even though it's virtually. We had the pedestrian emphasis area team meeting late last week, and one of the things that has come up is for those areas of interest that already have task force or coalitions in place, why not use the groups that are in place as those emphasis area teams? So in an effort to maybe entertain that idea, Michelle and Ben and Mike gave me the opportunity to just kind of give a real brief overview about the Strategic Highway Safety Plan. We're not going to get into a lot of detail, but we'll provide some opportunities for you to provide input and whether or not we want to move to the coalition really being the emphasis area team as opposed to another separate entity. You can go ahead, Michelle. You can go to the next one. I just wanted to kind of give you an idea about the process in which the Texas Strategic Highway Safety Plan, or SHSP, is developed and revised on every 5 years. And it is bottom up and top down, because so I guess the management team is that gets squished in the middle sometimes. But the emphasis areas are determined by it could be a priority area for FHWA or NHTSA or TxDOT or some other group, but it's so the naming of the emphasis areas are solidified by the data, the crash data from TxDOT. So each emphasis area team, whether it's pedestrian safety or impaired driving or roadway departure, those are a few, looks at the crash data, reviews the countermeasures either that are already implemented or countermeasures that work in other states, maybe emerging countermeasures, and then develop action plans based on that process to push forward those countermeasures and strategies that are most applicable to the state. And it doesn't necessarily have to be at a statewide level. It could be these types of cities would implement these types of things, or MPOs. So it doesn't have to always be statewide, but it needs to be applicable in general to the statewide audience. And then at the management team level, those are where the strategic objectives are identified and they're reviewed by the emphasis area teams for concurrence. And then looking at the comprehensive crash data. So that is the the overlap between, say, intersections and pedestrians, or impaired driving and run off the road, or roadway departures, or young drivers and intersections. So, and then looking at the overall trends. And then at the executive committee level, those are the committee members are higher level representatives from agencies like TxDOT, and I'm kind of going blank, but they're the ones that actually review the plan and then approve that before it is submitted to FHWA for their approval. Okay, you can go to the next one. This kind of gives you a 30,000 foot view and then a much lower view of how we're looking at the SHSP in terms of the emphasis areas. There are three major groups areas that we want to look at in terms of improving the overall transportation safety across the state. So there is preventing a crash. Then if a crash does occur, to do what we can from engineering, behavioral, those types of things to reduce the severity. And then kind of overarching area is enhance emergency response. And then one of the things we've done differently this year is we're looking at younger road users in terms of across all the emphasis areas. So there's not necessarily a standalone group for that particular emphasis area of younger road users. It's looking at them in relationship to the other ones. One of the things that has come up across the meetings, and we have our last meeting tomorrow, our last emphasis area meeting tomorrow, is that these are all the different emphasis areas. There's nine of them. Are we looking at this too much in a silo? How can we maybe not have nine emphasis areas but still be addressing those individual type problems, but in the context of the bigger transportation safety arena? You can go ahead. The next two slides are just to give a brief overview of the fatal and suspected serious injury crashes and the fatalities and serious injuries related to on the pedestrian side. So can you go back one? Okay, good. So you can see a little bit of a trend, and in all of these, we're kind of like waiting for 21 data to see did COVID have a negative impact or a positive impact on this particular area. You can see that the crashes have a somewhat of a downward trend on the serious injuries, but it's just ever so slightly trending up on the actual fatal crashes. Okay, next one. These are the individual pedestrian fatalities and suspected serious injuries. Fortunately, those serious injuries have gone down, but we are seeing the same type of trend on the fatalities. And this is probably not necessarily unique, but definitely when the pedestrian is involved and the number of crashes, the fatalities and serious injuries tend to match the same trend as the crashes do. Go ahead. This is a slide that I find not necessarily the most interesting, but one of the things that we need to dig a little deeper on, because like I said before, we tend to look at these things in terms of, well, it's a pedestrian emphasis or it's a intersection emphasis, and rarely are there just one characteristic of these crashes. So these interactions are pedestrian fatalities and serious injury crashes that were also classified as intersection crashes or impairment crashes, older users and distraction. We don't tend to look at dark lighting conditions as an overall emphasis area, but in terms of the pedestrian group, the dark lighting conditions is a major issue, because if you can't see someone when they're a vulnerable user and you can't see them, that's definitely a problem. One of the things that was interesting is that the impairment number is really high, and that is, those are pedestrians that were considered impaired. But the interesting thing is that on the pedestrian side, it's any alcohol instead of above a 0.08 or a 0.04 or whatever number that you want. So it's a little, you know, it's almost like had been drinking on the crash report. So it's not, to me, it's not necessarily as even though it's a very large number, indicative of a bigger problem. So what we would probably need to do to determine if that was the case and where, like, is this tend to be in urban areas near places that are serving alcohol, or, you know, we need a little more detail on that one to really better understand it, because we don't want to look at it in terms of, well, the pedestrian was intoxicated and so it was their fault, because that's not at all what should come out of that number. Now, one of the other things that we also want to look at is how often is, regardless of whether the pedestrian had alcohol in their system, what was the DWI crash rate that involved pedestrians? So we're only looking at the driver's alcohol. Older users and intersections and distraction seem a little more straightforward in terms of, well, you know, pedestrians crossing an intersection or people not paying attention at an intersection, speed at an intersection. When you have a vulnerable user in that mix, it doesn't bode well for them because they're of their vulnerability. So I just show you these four things to let you know that we are trying to dig a little deeper than we have in the past to understand, you know, distraction may be really underreported because it's difficult to tell whether somebody was distracted. But if we can dig a little deeper, then we can have some more specific numbers, crash information, so that we can identify and apply countermeasures that really will have an effect. Go ahead, Michelle. These are, as I said before, the Strategic Highway Safety Plan is updated every 5 years. So these were the the seven strategies that were identified by the emphasis area teams prior to the 2017 publication. And so these are the ones that are currently in there. Are these the right ones? One of the other questions we're asking is, are these strategies appropriate for Texas? Are in maybe not so much in on the pedestrian side, but on some of the other emphasis areas, Texas may have some requirements or issues where they were just not going to implement that, or it's not going to be implemented statewide. So some of the feedback that I would like to get from the coalition, and we will send something out to you, or Michelle will send something out to you so you have a chance to ponder. Are these the right seven strategies? Should they stand like they are? Should we be editing them? Should we be adding or deleting? Does anybody have any questions on the strategy part? I know I'm sort of going pretty fast through this. Go ahead to the next one. I didn't put all the strategies and the countermeasures in here for the seven separate ones for pedestrians, but this gives you an idea about what is considered a countermeasure, or the wording in there at the countermeasure level. So the number two and three are countermeasures that, based on our research or surveys from other different parts of the state, these are being implemented. They're successful, not necessarily knowing the impact. The first one is research the distance between safe pedestrian crossings. We did not find evidence that it is being done at this moment, but that doesn't mean that it isn't. We just need to get some feedback from the coalition and the MPOs on that. It mostly has to do with the fact that we don't know that whether it's not being implemented. So because of that, we don't know that it's successful in the state because of our lack of information. Mike mentioned how focused do the strategies have to be? And then Scott was talking about how does the design play into those strategies? All of the strategies, countermeasures, should address engineering, education, encouragement, enforcement, and the evaluation component, of course, but mainly the first four. So if there are design elements, and I can't off the top of my head, I'm sure Ben and some of the others would be able to give an example right off, but if there are design elements that are proven effective and are maybe even being used in the state that we need to put as a main priority, set forward an action plan to get those distributed more broadly in the state, we need to include that. Maybe go back to the slide before. At the strategy level, reducing pedestrian crashes on urban arterials and local roadways. That's a really broad statement. And so if we're talking about design, we may want a strategy that is a little more specific to design, even though it could fit under that particular strategy. So that kind of feedback would be really helpful. And as you look at these strategies, to Mike's point, these may, because you're experts in the area, these may be too vague, they may be too broad, or they may be too specific. Some of them might be able to be combined. I'm not going to say less is better, but I think if we focus on the things that we're capable of doing, and not just stretch goals, but that there's a possibility that that could happen. You talk about the in terms of equity. You can look at that, I guess, on a couple of the different levels. I was recently at a meeting in Denver, and equity was a big topic. And so they really, the presentations that I heard from the Wyoming and the Colorado contractors were really focusing on particular areas, whether that's geographic or demographic, and better understanding what we need to do to get those messages across, especially on the behavior side. So that kind of fell into encouraging, but you know, maybe that's something that needs to be called out separately. I'll be honest with you, this is the first time I've heard it come up in from the emphasis area teams. I didn't do them all, so I could be wrong.
Melissa, there's a couple of people that have their hand raised.
Joel
Meyer, would you like to unmute yourself and speak? Oh, it looks like you're unmuted.
Yeah, thanks. And yeah, thanks for the update on this. I was just going to chime in. I think the strategies and the emphasis areas all look good. You know, they're all things we know work and have data to kind of back all that up. I think the challenge that we face as like a municipal transportation agency is that these strategies and emphasis areas don't seem to be translating into design changes that that we know need to happen kind of on state-owned roads. And I'm just hoping that there's some level of accountability, you know, tying these strategies to actual decisions being made in the design of projects. I mean, just to give you an example, you know, when we go to get a crossing approved on a state-owned road and it doesn't meet the, you know, 20 pedestrians crossing per hour, you know, that's a very real barrier that we're seeing to actually implementing these things we're talking about. And there's a lot of other examples like that. So I don't know, maybe you could talk a little bit about how this plan is actually going to translate into actual changes on the ground.
Can you tell me what municipality you're from?
I'm in Austin.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to think of the politically correct way to answer this question. All of the TxDOT projects or the TxDOT funding is supposed to follow anything in the Strategic Highway Safety Plan. I'm not saying that always happens, but are you talking specifically about things that are done at the local level that may be have an interaction on the state system, or these are the state projects?
It's both. Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, typically, yeah, state-owned roads within the city or major highway projects.
Okay.
And yeah, without getting into too many specifics over like,
yeah,
individual decisions, like I think there's just a need to, I like this plan looks great. Like I think there's really some really good stuff in there, but if it's not leading to actual changes on the ground, then it's not really doing its job. So I'm just hoping that there can be some thought given to how that might be accomplished.
Right. I'm just taking some notes and. You know, one of the things that's come up has been the, not only this, but also, hey, it's been 5 years since we've really heard anything about this. What's happened since then? So this goes right along with that.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, Melissa, we have Jeff Miles has a question, and then we have a few questions in chat, and then we'll come back to John Haberman.
Okay.
So I guess my question, in terms of improving driver pedestrian safety awareness and behavior, the question relates to, I think there's different levels of awareness, and so I guess my question is, when y'all are looking at doing that, you know, there's the awareness as an awareness campaigns talking about general safety concerns, but then there's also, I felt like there's a gap in the data. I saw a presentation done a few years ago. I don't know if it was off of this, springboarded off of this work, or if it was completely independent. And it was talking about, they were presenting some data on some, there was seemed to be a higher injury rate for pedestrians approaching, and when someone was turning left, when they're approaching from the perspective of they can see the left turning vehicle versus the ones that are walking with the left turning vehicle. And I think it goes towards, I brought up in the meeting, it goes towards, I believe, pedestrian awareness, right? When, you know that when you're approaching the intersection and you're going to cross in front of a left turner on the same side of the intersection as the left turner is the beginning of the movement, that they can't see you. They're not expecting you to necessarily look at that left corner versus I think there's this assumption that, you know, the same thing goes for nighttime visibility for pedestrians. The assumption out there that the pedestrian, hey, I see your headlights, you must see me, and that's not the case. Yeah. And so going back to that, is anything going to be discussed, you know, from that standpoint? Because I think that's one of the things that could be addressed, not only in terms of awareness, but also in context of the design. And then the follow-on question goes to, I think, as a TxDOT employee, one of the things I'm trying to promote in our district is finding funding to actually promote off-system R2R projects specific to pedestrians because, you know, there's a major safety improvement in separating those two different travel methods, right? And, you know, especially in terms of the speed disparity, but there's also an operational improvement. And my point being is the normal answer I get from TxDOT is, hey, we can't fund those. And I'm like, well, if it improves the operation of our road, why can't we leverage it? You know, similar to, I hate to use the example of carbon credits or whatever, but the idea of we have a safety improvement over here, can we pay for the safety improvement over here by building this separate our facility? So those are the two questions. I don't know if those were extremely clear, and I apologize, but I'll stop there.
No, they were clear, and I think that makes a lot of sense. So finding some clarity in that is important.
And then we have a comment from Darcy Schiffel and then Barbara Russell. Well, it looks like Barbara's comment is to Joel. The comment from Darcy Schiffel is, I'm wondering, since Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and Houston have fallen off the pedestrian-focused cities list, what have they done differently than San Antonio since we are still a focused city?
I don't know the answer to that, but we can definitely find out about that.
Yeah. I wanted to say a little bit about or speak to the equity question a little bit. I know we have Amelia Hayes on from FHWA and Susan Jaworski from Houston Galveston Area Council. I'm recently coming back to TTI from spending some time at Houston Galveston Area Council, and there is, I know at Houston and at NCT COG, there's equity is like kind of the first thing we try to evaluate. And I think there is some data probably that we could look at to help kind of meet those gaps. 'Cause we've got, you know, we've got the the pedestrian network, and we have a bike network, and then we have a transit network, and then we have a highway network. So how do those kind of fold together to help address the equity in transportation that we're facing? So I'll stop there. And then, okay, it looks like Joel answered, and then we have a couple more people with a hand raised. John, you're next, and then Barbara Russell will be next.
Good morning, everybody. My major, I guess, am I supposed to turn on the camera and all those stuff? My major comment, and Joan Hudson knows about this as well, is every time y'all say something, suggest something, propose anything, submit anything, my biggest frustration over the last 8 years is we go to town hall meetings and TxDOT or the cities tout, look what our project's going to do for pedestrians. But then I said, what are we going to do with pedestrians during construction? Well, given the fact that we had inadequate pedestrian facilities before construction, we're not obligated to do anything for pedestrians during construction. But even the inadequate pedestrian crossings were something, and construction annihilates anything that was something into nothing with no added anything into the construction design going, how are we going to accommodate pedestrians? We have a traffic control plan for big trucks, for cars, and all those other different things, but rarely did we come across a set of plans that included pedestrian crossings as a traffic control plan initiative for the bicyclists and the pedestrians and now the scooters. So my little flag that I'm going to be, or my little drum that I'll beat, is don't forget pedestrians during construction. That's why I joined the meeting today, was to be able to say that. So thanks.
Thanks, John.
And I wanted to hop in really quickly. I think I appreciate Michelle's input on equity, but I wanted to actually direct this back to Melissa. Is there a place in the SHSP where equity is explicitly addressed?
I don't think in the 2017 does it have that emphasis. And it's a good point, because it should be, it doesn't matter just pedestrians, it should be across the board. I'm wondering if the HSP has that in it either. So I have to go check on that. I don't know who's, I can't see everybody who's on the call, so I can't tell if there might be somebody that knows the answer on the HSP side. No, but it is something that needs to be included, Ben.
Yeah.
Explicitly included.
Yeah. And I think that so much has happened between 2017 and now. My two points would be, one, we know that USDOT's has an exceptionally increased emphasis on equity in transportation, and so I think that's a topic in and of itself. But I know, based on recent conversations with the UTCs that we work with, that is being emphasized how important equity is. And to add on to that, what I would say is, I think that this is an opportunity for our state. I'm sorry, did somebody just say something? I think that's just the background. I think this is an opportunity for our state organizations to, again, work, not just look up to our federal organizations, but also to look to our local organizations, because our regional and our local organizations have been doing a lot of work in that area. I think that perhaps this is teeing up a presentation from my friends over at the City of Austin, because I know that they have been working on this quite a bit in the past 8 years. So I think that's an important topic, one that we're going to spend some time focusing on. I want to go to Barbara Wilson, Barbara Russell, really quickly. Barbara, can you go ahead and unmute yourself and ask your question?
Sure. This kind of relates to 4 and 7. I brought it up before and people looked at me like I was the bad guy in the room. And I just want to know if it's being worked on. I also attended the U.S. Department of Public meeting on justice yesterday, and because it kind of touches on that as well. In the meeting yesterday, they talked a lot about listening to folks and making decisions based on vocal input, and they stressed highly that there's maybe a less of an input or impact based on numbers, and I think underserved communities already have the numbers, and that was kind of my frustration with yesterday's meeting. I was like, underserved communities have numbers, and what happens is sometimes they get, again, trying to go with a politically correct way to say it, is sometimes the people that speak up aren't the ones that have the numbers. And so is there going to be a way to protect the people that historically don't speak up in the underserved communities, so that we do address the numbers? That was one of my kind of questions. Is there a protection going to be in place for them? Because they either don't or trust the government. Mm-hmm. And then additionally, sometimes in the underserved communities, the places with bigger homes tend to have bigger front yards right away. So it's really easy to meet ADA accommodations. You've got 6 feet. Okay, we can put in 6 feet. Well, sometimes underserved communities have smaller lots and much tighter right-of-ways. And unless you buy right-of-way and displace people, which we don't want to do, we're trying to serve them, how do we fit 6 feet, which is kind of a lot, is there going to be something in place to where we can get them out of the street? Is that going to be looked at as, at least an interim measure or some kind of design criteria to, get them out of the road to sort of help them out and help with those numbers? So those were just my two question comments.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Barbara.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and I'm trying to figure out, maybe it just needs some thought on how to articulate that best in a strategy, because it's definitely more than a countermeasure. It's really, how are we going to look at this overall? So if you have any thoughts on that, after we get off this call, we are going to be interacting digitally with you to hopefully get some more feedback, but that definitely should be manifested in these strategies in some way, more specifically than it is right here.
Yeah,
because it would be lost.
So I'm going to go to Jeff in a second. I want to ask Scott's question. Scott White asked, is there a way we can build funding into recommendations for strategies, especially with our current funding models and priorities? He mentions that the Texas Mobility Fund is an opportunity to invest in active transportation infrastructure and retrofits. Melissa, do you have a comment on that?
So not just in the TxDOT funding or local funding, but in different... I'm trying to go back to where his question was.
Scott, do you want to speak up to this? But I will say that I think that there's two questions. One, is there an opportunity to connect funding specifically to strategies? And the second, I think, is looking beyond current funding models and the Texas Mobility Fund. Just one, Scott, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, exactly. Because we focus on what we fund. If we don't fund safety, it's not going to be built into the system. And so that's a big priority. In the past year, couple of years under the Texas Transportation Commission and TxDOT budget, there was specific dedicated funding for safety. And now that model's been changed, and it's somehow the safety funding has been incorporated into other funding streams, so it's not specifically about safety. But if there was somebody commented earlier that they couldn't do certain things because the funding model didn't allow it. So between just making sure the funding that is there, but also changing our legislative priorities and policies so that we can fund the things that we need to fund. Because I know under the Texas Transportation Fund, most of that goes to roadways, and it's very limited in what you can do otherwise. The mobility fund, just being recently reopened, is an opportunity for everyone in this coalition to really speak up and specify that we need the mobility fund to go to something other than just roads. And it needs to go to all these other priorities that have been underfunded, and so that we can include the walk and bike facilities, and that we can go back and fix those intersections that are a problem, not just study them, but actually fix them. And so that's kind of it is two points, but I think that's how we need to work on that. And something I'll bring up later when we get to the updates.
Thank you, Scott. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I do appreciate it. I don't know that I have an answer, but I think that these are the types of things that are strategies, because we can have lots of great countermeasures, but if there's no funding to implement, there's no way they can have an impact because they're not done. So,
okay. Thank you, Scott. And so let's go back over to Jeff. Jeff, do you have a question? We have a few more minutes. We'll try to get to the rest of the comments and questions. Jeff?
I think the question is, as y'all are looking at this, you know, I think equity is an important thing. I think we need to make improvements. I think the one thing, though, is I really like the comments so far about being data-driven. And the reason why I bring that up is because I've seen some engineers sit there and say, oh, well, we got to put in hike and bike facilities along these several corridors, and we just got to put it in without really any input from the public. And I say that because I used a specific example in a recent project I was reviewing, an value engineering study, where, you know, what I did was I actually pulled an MPO study that was done where it said, hey, the gaps that they would like to see filled in a certain area. And it didn't include the entire length of the corridor. And not to say, again, that the entire length of the corridor didn't need to be addressed. I'm still a big proponent of creating an off-system project where there's some type of metric that allows you to fund safety improvements by creating off-system facilities rather than putting on the main one to separate those the disparity in speed, right? We know that pedestrian getting hit is never going to be a good thing. Same thing with bicycle traffic by vehicle. So if we can create those points of separation, it's even better. But even to the point where I've seen it on other facilities where they went with a narrower path on both sides of the road rather than doing an evaluation with the public to potentially put a wider, more useful path on one side of the road. And so the only comment, so it's really kind of a question, as y'all are looking at developing future discussion topics or something like that, you know, trying to pull that information together so we can make more informed decisions is really my point. You know, what are we going to do in reference? And I was trying to even look through the seven things that were listed here below for pedestrian strategies. I think, you know, the design engineers need a little bit more guidance on that, and especially also in terms of how to interact with the public, because I've run into design engineers that are just so afraid to talk to the public, they just automatically throw everything up. And then what ends up happening is, you know, we're putting stuff in places that aren't getting used, when maybe we could reallocate those funds at another location that would be in a better served facility. And so just making informed decisions associated with that, the equity. I think the other comment would be is in terms of any tool that's developed in reference to that, is that it also needs to be data-driven from the standpoint of, I'd rather make incremental improvements because that can kill an entire project. You know, making the right decision-based incremental improvements that are better with a plan. And I think that's the other thing we need to make sure that we're doing, when we sit here and talk about it, is going and developing those advanced plans that interact with the public. And then I guess the last question, and I don't know if those were questions or statements, but it's, you know, as you're developing those materials. But I think the last one that goes into that deals with, I've seen another issue where the state can do everything we've got in our power. We call it ramps to nowhere. Mm. And I've got a spot that I'm doing an improvement in a city, and I'm putting in a ramp so I can create a crossing that's needed, but the city's not, you know, partnering with us to finish the connection points. And so, you know, when you sit there and you look at that, you know, what are we doing? What guidance are we providing cities? Because I've seen that case, but then I've also seen the case where new developments are coming up. Some are getting designed very, very well to be pedestrian and bicycle friendly, and some are not. And, you know, I think they're hurting for guidance too from that standpoint. Because if the state does their due diligence to get people there, but then it's an unsafe environment when they get to those destination points, you know, have we accomplished anything? So, anyway.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. So we're going to switch gears really quickly, but I do want to touch base on a few of the comments that have been made. So I'm trying to find my place. I went too far up the chat box. Carla Windsor wrote, maybe there's a way to look at spending and education spent in our five major metros on pedestrian safety, that MPOs and regions within these cities fall into. You could probably look at the design expectations and policies. So that's an opportunity to get a little bit of a better context for some of these strategies, recognizing that not all strategies fit all applications, but we do have the benefit of living in a state that literally has every different typology from state to small city to mid-sized city to large urban city. In a number of different land development styles. So I think we, again, have the opportunity to really learn from each other. Carla also said a topic for our forum or subsequent coalition meeting is the new TR bill that impacts to pedestrian issues and priorities, and that there's a requirement for regional complete streets plans and other planning to occur. Interesting. Michelle Canton dropped in FHWA transportation equity guidance, so that's in there. Our friend Jake Blazek-Crossley mentioned that there's another new funding stream that similarly should not only be spent on car priorities, the new allocation of the TERP funds diverted to CMAQ. It's about $90 million a year, all of which could theoretically be spent on sidewalks. So again, that goes back to this conversation about funding and funding streams. We definitely need to look for opportunities to be creative. And I think that one of the jobs, many of us are sitting in the seat, sitting at the table, working at TxDOT or within cities, but I think that there's also a role that the coalition plays collectively, which is to, you know, increase awareness of this stuff. Jay always does an excellent job of bringing that advocacy perspective and advocating for some of these opportunities. So to that end, that is another example of a funding stream that we should look into. So to that end, I think funding is a evolving topic and one that we should spend some time thinking about. So with that, I think we should switch gears really quickly. We'll talk about webinars. Melissa, thanks so much.
Thank you. This has been a great one.
Yes, this is a good group. This is a good group. No shortage of input. And as John Haberman says, welcome back to TTI. We're really happy to have you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So with that, we want to very quickly transition to the webinar topics. And I think that the as Mike discussed, the idea here was that we recognize that when we hold these coalition meetings, we try to stay pretty high level, provide these opportunities for really good discussion and engagement. But we don't always have the opportunity to really dive deep into some of these topics. And we recognize that there's a need for that. We really appreciate the fact that so many of you folks show up every quarter for our quarterly meetings. And sometimes the topics might not necessarily speak to something that you don't know or something that you really need to do your job. However, everyone gets involved and gets engaged, and that's the strength of the coalition. The webinar topics are meant to provide us with the ability to, again, do a deep dive and provide some more targeted information to a target audience. And so one of the things that we'll do is not only think about what the topic is, but also think about how we're going to reach out. So as opposed to just kind of sending it to our coalition members, we'll be doing additional outreach to try to pull in folks that are outside of the coalition proper. You know, we have, I think, 300 and something names on the coalition. We had a little bit of a smaller turnout this month. Typically, for some reason, November is kind of a smaller month for our quarterly meetings. But as folks know, we typically have about 100 to 120 folks at our meetings in the summer and the spring and summer. So to that end, we have a handful of topics based on input provided by you folks. What we want to do is we want to ask you to provide some additional webinar topics. We're going to put them into a poll, and we're going to very quickly give you folks the opportunity to prioritize the topics that you think we should try to focus on. Some of these will also be, you know, probably incorporated into future coalition presentations or forums, if not touched on as a webinar topic. So again, three webinars this year, and, you know, we'll want to get moving on these relatively quickly. So to that end, crash modification factors and metrics associated with pedestrian safety activities was one that was mentioned at the conclusion of the forum. Innovative engineering countermeasures, policy initiatives to improve pedestrian safety, funding needs to support pedestrian safety, one that I think is going to rise to the top, pedestrian safety for children, collaborative development agreements to improve pedestrian infrastructure, alcohol involvement in pedestrian serious injuries and fatalities, and pedestrian safety law awareness. These were topics that we pulled based on, again, previous input that we've received from you folks and some input we've received from directly from some of our colleagues. And so we'll set up a poll, but I want to just give the room the chance to breathe for about, I'll say, 3 minutes. I'm not going to say anything, and I just want folks to just take a seat and think about some topics that might be useful, and then we'll very quickly kind of prioritize. And that will help us, again, prioritize what we should focus on first. I think that those that are prioritized, we've, you know, given the greatest priority in this webinar. Others will be addressed in future coalition meetings as well as forums. So if a topic doesn't rise to the top, it will still get addressed. So we have a total of about 40 folks in this call right now. And nobody's provided any other topics, so we'll give it another minute before we field our survey, or our poll, rather. But I did want to, again, just ask those with ideas to feel free, throw anything against the wall. I might go up the chat and see if we can include some of these other topics. Getting some really good ideas. So what we're going to do is we're going to put these all in the poll. Michelle's putting them together right now. So the cool thing is that Teams, oh no. Teams has the ability to add poll options. Of course, we just found out while building the poll that there are only so many options that we can include. So to that end, I think we can streamline the funding options. So a couple things. We'll keep this chat. Funding, I think, is going to be a little bit of a complex topic, and I think that there's a couple different ways we can look at it. We can look at funding with equity, we can look at funding, innovative funding opportunities, and we can also look at kind of bread and butter funding streams and how that's changing based on the evolving policies at the federal and state level. So we can streamline those topics. Michelle, when you're ready, you can pop that poll in. But the point I was going to make is that we keep track of this chat. So when we go back through and we look at our topics, we'll make sure that we're listening to folks' comments. So if you think that there's a nuance or something like Joan's providing to say expand ped safety for children to include older adults, that's something that we'll keep track of. So one other thing that I wanted to mention, you can vote for as many options as you'd like. So this doesn't mean that you have to choose a topic that you think is the most important. Choose as many topics as you think are the most important. And this will be the opportunity for us to find out, again, what we should prioritize above all else. So everybody, if you please go ahead and vote on webinar topics. And if anybody has any questions on how to use the chat, the poll is going to be found in the chat box. So everyone should see it right in the chat box. Let us know if you're having any issues accessing it. who is talking to my muted computer. So far we have 21 responses, which is great. There's 40 of us in here, so I'm hoping that we can get at least maybe 75% of us to provide our input here. So if everyone can just take a couple seconds to look through there, those of you that have done so, we really appreciate it. Thank you, Melissa. We appreciate that. So with that, I'm going to transition back to Mike Manser, who's going to get some pedestrian safety updates from our stakeholders. But please, we have 27 responses, three away from 75%. So if you haven't voted yet, please do so. Thank you. Mike.
All right. Thanks, Ben. All right. So this is the time where if you have updates from your organization or activities that you're completing that you want to share with the rest of the group, please do so. You just have to unmute yourself or you can put it in the chat box. I was texting with Millie. Millie, I think you had a couple updates. Is that right?
I do. Can you hear me okay?
Okay,
perfect. I have a few things for Federal Highway, and I'll get Ed to chime in and fill in anything that I've missed and give a little bit more detail. The first item is our FHWA proven safety countermeasures. If you're familiar with that, like hopefully you are, we have 20 that are existing. They've been around since like 2002. These are some items that we promote quite a bit. I'll drop some links into the chat when I'm finished talking. But coming up, I guess that's Monday, we are announcing a few new proven safety countermeasures. We're actually having, I believe, 8 new ones and kind of a very big update to one of the existing ones. So now we'll have a total of, I believe it's 30. So two of these proven safety countermeasures are specifically for pedestrians. So one of them is the rapid rectangular flashing beacon. We also have crosswalk visibility enhancements, which really runs the gamut, covers a lot of stuff, covers lighting, covers extra signage, covers extra pavement markings. So I'll drop the link in the chat. There's a big webinar that's our official rollout that's coming up on Monday, and I'll include the links where you can sign up for that as well. So be looking on more about that from us in the coming months. These don't get updated that frequently, so we're really excited about it. And the second, there were some chats at the beginning of the conversation of the meeting earlier about this. But it's really about our FHWA focused approach to safety. Last month, I think it was 3-4 weeks ago, we had an official rollout of updates on that. So last round, FHWA had deemed Texas to be a focused state in all of the areas. I'm happy to say that we've improved a little bit. We are currently only a focus state in roadway departure and then in, unfortunately, pedestrians. So what that means for us, and I'll let Ed chime in a little bit more going into the pedestrian stuff, but it doesn't really change anything for us is the way that we're looking at it here in the Texas division. The thought is that in the past, if we did have the focus cities of, in the past, they were Houston, San Antonio, Austin, Dallas, and Fort Worth. If there were training needs that we were up against other division offices or potentially other cities asking for resource center help in obtaining training, I know sometimes we've had our resource center come out to the MPOs to give trainings or to TxDOT to give trainings, possibly presentations. At venues such as this. In the past, we were top of the list because we were a focused state. We can still get those, but if there's someone else who's actually a focused state in some of those other areas that we are no longer an area for, we can still get them. We'll get them hopefully eventually, but just we won't be top of the list anymore. So that really applies to the folks in Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and Houston. You'll see maybe a bit of change if those MPOs or cities are asking for specialized training needs. With that, I'll push it back to Ed Burgos Gomez, who will give a little bit more about San Antonio being one of those new focus cities.
Yeah, so hi, everyone. Yeah, so as Mil mentioned, I believe it was toward the end of October that Federal Highway announced 15 states that they are now a focus state and part of the focus safety approach. So as of the iteration of the focus approach to safety, we consider road with departure, intersection, and pedestrian and bicycle. So one of the changes with this iteration was that Federal Highway has separated the focus area of pedestrian and bicyclists, and now they're treated separately. With that being said, and related to what Millie said, yes, Texas continues to be a focus state for pedestrian, and related to the cities, in the past, the methodology that was done, it was related to cities particularly, but now the methodology was around regional boundaries. So AMPO, the Alamo Area MPO, is now the only region within Texas that's a focus approach to pedestrian. What are the benefits of this? Is everybody of San Antonio in the call, like Mel said, priority in access to assistance? So in the past, we've done technical assistance, such as data analysis, action plans development, also a lot of trainings and webinars that we've done. Maybe we're in the process right now. Last week, I believe it was our headquarter offices reached out to these focus regions and focus states. So we're currently now coordinating what they call a WOOP call, wishes, outcomes, obstacles, and plans. So Tesla will be signing up for one of these WOOP calls, and also the Alamo area will be coordinating one of those. So yes, as Mila mentioned, for those cities that are no longer a focus city, yes, the priority will be for the Alamo area region, but that doesn't mean that you will not receive support or technical assistance from Federal Highway. Yes, we still have assistance for you. The only thing is that these focus regions will be prioritized over the non-focus. But yes, we still have assistance and technical support for you.
Thank you. I want to move on to two updates in the chat box. One, Jay posts, this Sunday is the World Day of Remembrance for the Victims of Traffic Violence. We're doing a statewide Zoom, but encouraging people to gather in local nodes across the state and log into the statewide event together. There's a link that Jay provided, so if you want to join that, all the information is there. Dexter from Houston Coalition for Complete Streets. Dexter, do you have a minute or so just to join in? And
right here.
Hello. Wonderful. Go ahead.
Okay. Basically, here in Houston, we've teamed up with AARP and used their toolkit to train folks on how to conduct walk audits. We're trying to document the conditions of our sidewalks and crosswalks and hazardous walking areas, and provide this data to the planning department. And they're ready and willing to receive all this data. However, we've discovered that capturing this stuff and putting it into a completed report is kind of tedious, as the tools that AARP provided are still manual PDF worksheets. I've converted some of them into spreadsheets on Excel, but I'm reaching out to everybody. Do any of you have access or knowledge of automated walk audit tools, i.e. smartphone apps with the ability to capture pictures and to grade the conditions of sidewalks, crosswalks, etc.? We started this project a year ago. We're still in the process of training folks. We've conducted a few walk audits. We're also capturing existing walk audits that some of our communities have already done using different tools. but we're trying to get all this stuff to the planning department. They're willing and ready to receive it, and I'm reaching out and letting you guys know about it as well.
Are there any, you can put it in the chat window, but are there any automated tools that anyone knows about? One person maybe to chat with is Joel Meyer from City of Boston. He might know of a tool if it's out there.
Okay. This is it, Joel. Hi, Jake.
Hey, Jake. I was actually sending Dexter an email that I was just going to share with everybody. There's one great project called Project Sidewalk, and it's a University of Washington project, and they actually crowdsource doing sort of a citywide walk on it via Google Street View. And so then actually, and part of their whole thing is that people who are homebound because of their abilities can participate and can be part of it. And so that's, and I once talked to those people and they were interested in the idea of coming to Texas. So it might be something worth looking into, and I'll send you the link.
Okay, thank you.
Susan Jaworski has her hand raised. There was a tool that was looked at HGAC. I feel like the Ditto wrote on it, but I cannot remember what it's called. I'm hoping Susan remembers.
Right. That's what I want. I was in the process of writing an email as well, because we're getting ready to go on, the Ped Bike Subcommittee is getting ready to go on a big adventure of trying to capture functionality above and beyond just kind of design standards for all vulnerable users, from veterans to disabled to seniors to other vulnerable populations that have unique needs, to make sure that to really drill down and try to get to the functionality of the walkability. We're still probably a year away, but we have developed and we've done a pilot for the Pedestrian Environmental Quality Index. And what it does is it integrates photos and videos directly into GIS. So you're able to pull it up along with the scores of the, and we did use the walking audits as a starting point, and then it ended up being developed into this index that made it to where it's all electronic. I wouldn't say necessarily automated, but it's still manual entry, but it is all electronic, and we would be able to connect with you and see if we could maybe partner on this.
Yeah. Dexter, do you want to?
That sounds good. I'd definitely like more information on that.
And I think, Dexter, did you put your email in the chat window?
Yes, I did. AndyDexter@gmail.com.
There it is. Laura, can you recopy that and put it back in the chat so it's kind of at the top of everybody's list? I can do that, I think.
Appreciate this information.
Okay, any other updates? See, there's a hand up, Jeff Miles.
So the comment I think is at the ITS TechSite meeting that was just recently held up in the Dallas area, there was a group that did a presentation on some data that was collected in, I believe, the Dallas area. I don't remember the name of the group, but you should be able to get access to the presentation itself. They attempted to create an automated system in terms of going and doing that type of audit. It didn't work out exactly how they planned, but the point being is they did seem to have some progress on it. I think they still had a whole bunch of manual coding, but you know, sometimes, like anything else, the first version, 1.0, doesn't work out, but that maybe is the starting point for other groups to develop a 2.0. So I'll just mention that.
Thank you, Jeff. Laura, you had your hand up?
This is one of the other stakeholder updates. I think Neil was on and can post some links. But just wanted to mention that the TxDOT, the Safety Grant sponsored Walk Bike Safe program is active for another year. And please feel free to visit the website, any of our social media channels. I think I think Neil's going to post the post the links, and a bunch of good information there, including a bunch of videos. We are starting to incorporate messages and materials about the new pedestrian safety laws that went into effect on September 1st, and so that's going to be one of the message areas that we have for this coming year. And I am Neil, if I'm forgetting to mention anything, chime in or put it in the chat. Thank you.
Cool. Okay, right at the end of the hour here. Thank you, everybody, so much for all your input and feedback today. It's very much appreciated. And Melissa, I'll chat with her later on today, but I'm sure she got a whole lot of very, very good information. So thank you again. We will send out a notice pretty soon about the next Texas Pedestrian Safety Coalition meeting date. Again, we're trying to do these every quarter, so we're probably looking at January, February-ish time frame. So I will leave the meeting up and going, but thank you so much for your time today, and have a safe rest of your week. We'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Why?